that's just going to happen in 2 days. That Trinity Roots.
Two days away.
If the 10th of November is 2 days away, then yes, indeed. That's come around in a flash, hasn't it?
That's come around fast.
So Trinity Roots are performing at Q Theatre at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday, presented by 95BFM. We also present later on in the evening an 8 p.m. show, sold out. There are tickets for the 4 o'clock in the afternoon show. What? Take your children. If you love your children, you'll take your children.
Whoa.
I'm just saying. You know, parenting hint.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Leah's a parent Anyway, onwards.
You taking your child?
Yes, I wish I could.
See, as long as you wish you could, you're a great parent. At 8 p.m., the show sold out, and Saturday's show sold out, it is too. The Sunday show. Saturday's the 10th, Sunday's the 11th, and 95BFM presents Trinity Roots then too, but they're sold out at the Q Theatre. If you've got a ticket, well done. Well done indeed. Our guest in the studio now is Aaron McLean. Hi, Aaron. How are you, sir?
Good, thanks, Mikey.
Aaron, you are the inspiration for a magazine and the instigator of Stone Soup.
I am. Well, yeah, I guess so.
It says instigator on the inside. And Stone Soup is a magazine for people who revel in the world of food, but maybe not like a cuisine magazine at all.
It's a little bit unlike any other magazine, I suppose. It's a collaborative, collective, independent effort. So the parable, I don't know if you're familiar with the Stone Soup parable, but basically couple of sort of itinerant strangers arrive in a town with nothing to eat, and so they sort of bring a pot to the town square and light a fire, put a stone in it because they've got nothing else to eat, melt some snow, and then they kind of people start gathering around saying, what are you up to there? It's like, we're making some stone soup. Stone soup, what's that? Well, you know, it's pretty delicious, but it'd be nicer if we had a sprig of parsley or something. And so people start coming in from the town and adding a bit of parsley and a bit of this and a bit of that.
Really,
and at the
nice
end of the day,
story.
People
nice
end up
parable,
kind of
yeah.
hanging out, having a feed. And so I'm the guy with the pot and the stone, but we've kind of managed to get a whole bunch of other people to come
cool.
and chuck some parsley and some carrots to make the soup a bit more tasty.
And the stuff that you guys talk about isn't necessarily like the tastiest spot or where you should go.
30 Christmas treats.
No.
What to cook for your Christmas feast?
We've got
macaroon
few.
Mad.
I wouldn't mind a macaroon, but no, we've gone... We've gone away from recipes. There's lots of recipes in the world, whether in the magazines that we can get in the supermarket or, you know, on YouTube or wherever. So we're kind of looking at all those other stories that are being neglected, looking at the social and the environmental.
It's almost like a food fanzine, isn't it?
I suppose so. Well, it's kind of street press, but it's and that's how it started. The idea was like the generosities in the kind of the making of it, but also in giving it away and a sort of lacquer street press culture, I guess, in New Zealand.
Yeah, totally, totally. It's really, really nice to see. So what is it about that, like, how would you describe what you do, essentially?
I do that, just keep that water simmering, basically, and try and kind of, you know, like, and I've obviously got stuff that I write and contribute to it, but basically I'm kind of just there to kind of field the people who have been drawn to it, which has been heaps of people all over the country, both kind of contributors and distributors. And what's
your philosophy about food writing and food discussion?
Well, I guess my philosophy, there are probably a few of them, but it's, I guess what we talked about when we started it, that was we were going to look at the world through the lens of food. So often we're looking at sort of environmental things or social issues, all of the stuff that revolves around, and also obviously food's a place that we all have always congregated, so it's a good place to have a discussion, pull up a chair, have a feed.
And it's more sort of about it's less about sort of a wonderful way to melt the top of creme brulee, and more about sort of where it comes from and
where it comes from,
how to understand the culture,
who it comes from,
and how much it costs to come from there.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing with, there's often a discussion in food in New Zealand about what is our food culture, and we don't know really, a lot of us, we can't answer it. I guess it's really diverse.
If that chops and changes all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like it's 1 minute it's all pavlovas and asparagus spears, and then suddenly it's all bloody, like I say, fancy macaroons and beyond my belief.
Yeah, and then I guess what's emerging is you know, a few other stories, like we're, you know, decolonizing our food, going back and looking at the kind of indigenous food ways, and there's a few sort of champions of that, but it's being picked up all over the place.
Speaking of champions of that, there was one in particular that you mentioned before.
Yeah, well, Monique Fiso is obviously, I mean, she's very well covered now, but she's about to open a restaurant in Wellington called Hiakai. She started, worked in the States at sort of Michelin star restaurants and had a bit of a cultural epiphany there about the fact that actually she might want to get in touch with her heritage, came back, started kind of going into the bush and foraging, cooking hangi on her own, you know, like didn't have a lot of help. And
solo
now
hangi, like, solo hangi.
That's a fine dining hangi. Yeah, in a tent.
Well, really,
she's about to open a restaurant down in Wellington, and that's pretty exciting because she's kind of ended up with a lot of help around her to,
I was looking through photos, you know, in the last few months ago of, you know, like just old family photos. And there's a photo of my my papa and my dad and uncles and that sort of stand, you know, and we're talking a good collection of white New Zealand males all standing around a hangi that they put down in my uncle's back garden. I can't remember the last time our family did that.
Mine.
You know, that was quite a 70s thing, you know. Oh, we could do it that. Yeah, you know, chuck a hangi, you know, sort of thing.
What she's done.
Not particularly adept at doing it, but still good fun, you know.
Worth a go, and again, like, good place to congregate.
True, which we don't, you know, we find it very difficult nowadays for some reason because we're just so fast paced.
And no one can afford a backyard.
No one can afford it. We can't even afford a dining room table, you know what I mean? It's like, that's our issues. We try and have family dinners with you know, around a dining room table. We don't have room for a dining room table or a dining room table. You know, so what's the technique? And you talk also about sustainability.
Next issue, I guess, is a kind of just segue from that is going to be focusing on the land, basically. Looking at, you know, I guess New Zealand was founded as an agricultural nation.
Because that's the idea behind decolonizing our palate, right?
Like,
to feed off what we can grow here.
Yes, what comes here, what was naturally here, but also what we might be growing in our backyards, and so that's kind of what we're looking at. You know, not a, you know, milk powder production, but you know, there's some pretty awesome examples around the country of people who are doing things a bit.
We're very lucky to be a country that can do that as well. You know,
that's right.
Not every country can. Not every country has the ability. You know, has the ability where it's mostly, you know, the land has got enough water, the land's got to enough sun, it's just, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know.
Nice rich soil, and although we can't load a hangi in the backyard very easily without the cops turning up, we can plant a few seeds.
Would the cops turn up? They would, wouldn't they?
Probably, yeah. That was one of Monique's problems when she's getting started. There's like a fire ban throughout the whole country.
Oh, people think you should be burning rubbish or something.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. No,
oh, the demise of the hangi.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's having a resurgence.
Yeah. And what other things are important to the people who put the magazine together?
I think independence, probably. Yeah. Having, you know, like what's been amazing, we've got no money. The whole thing's crowdfunded, so we sort of are almost meeting our
Just Works readers.
Works. And ultimately we sort of made a decision not to pursue money because then we're going to turn into all of those other magazines because we're going to be expected to speak that language. Yeah. So I think, you know, the carrot is you can speak in your own voice, tell the stories you wanted to tell. So
where can people get the magazine from?
Dumped. We do it twice a year only because of the fact that, you know, because of the nature of it. But we'd cram a lot into that, and then we'd distribute it through cafes and restaurants, bars, record shops.
A lot of the articles are also online, is that right?
Yeah, everything. So we've got everything up to the issue we're about to put out is on the website. So,
and it's all very good and well, though. Just a little aside there about online is all very good and well saying, oh, yeah, I've got it in my documents folder on my computer. Like, you're going to read that again, you know, sort of thing. It's really nice having a magazine that you can just pull out of a box and look at it again. I love magazines.
If someone couldn't get
yeah, no, I know. Yeah, yes.
But it has been the interesting thing with it, because that's, you know, in the world that I work usually, which is in the rest of the food media, you know, the sort of wisdom is that print's dead. But the interesting thing with Stone Soup is people, that's what they've loved the most about it. And it's also how they stumble across it. Yeah, cool.
And what are some of the things that you think New Zealanders really need to know about at the moment that we're a little in the dark about?
Oh, geez. There's lots of things. I guess you need to go and find our next issue.
nice.
I don't know. That's an endless debate. I'll have to come back. But I think one of the most interesting stories that's emerging at the moment is out of fishing. We've sort of got an interesting way of managing our fish, or mismanaging it. I think that was put in place in an attempt to manage it, but there's a few kind of
seems like we manage it by going, oh, look what the fish have gone.
That's right.
Make sure that doesn't happen again.
It seemed to be an ongoing discussion for years about different quotas and.
Yeah, and I mean, we're kind of, you know, like last time you went to the supermarket, what fish did you see? Sort of piles of rotting terakee and snapper, but that's about it. And
gurned,
the rest of it, of course, gurned, you know, like there's a chef that I work with down in Lyttelton quite a bit, Julio Sterler, and he's a Chilean who came to New Zealand. He's kind of like, I'm on an island, where's all the fucking fish?
What's going on?
And so that's kind of started a bit of a conversation for him and a bit of a movement that's evolved out of that. And he is in Lyttelton, so he sees these fish boats, you know, massive trawlers down to small fishermen there all the time. He talks to the guy there, you know, what's the story, why can't I get any fish, you know? And this guy's saying, oh, well, I land 30 species every day, but they're all going overseas. So
wow.
Yeah, like, stories of all of our mackerel going to basically the, you know, Ivory Coast and being sold for $2 a kilo because nobody in New Zealand apparently wants to eat mackerel, but we don't know how to eat it because we don't have any access to it.
Wow, crazy. That's a huge story. And there's, I was talking to Aaron about a documentary called Hooked, which was going to come out, which never came out, which was all about how much we're decimating the fish around just offshore here in New Zealand. And we, you know, it's really, I mean, I know that there are people out there who are trying really hard to manage our fisheries, and I guess in the same way, make sure that we don't take too many fish. There's people making sure that we don't have, you know, too many hens shitting on too many other hens, or too many pigs in boxes, you know, that sort of thing. There are people out there that are trying really hard to make things sustainable and make things
Julio likes to talk about the fact that he's a bit bemused that, you know, our main protein source in New Zealand is chicken, and yet we've got one of the longest coastlines on the planet. So instead of sending that fish away, maybe we could be, you know, anteating chicken.
Yeah, well, do you think it's not only just sending it away, it's just also having not replaced it when we've taken it?
The way that we catch it, but also, I guess that is kind of the extension of the story, because what's happening is that there are some fishermen that are starting to kind of pull outside of that system, buying a small amount of quota. They call themselves artisanal fishers, and they're trying to work direct with restaurants at this stage. There's only a handful around the country who are doing it. Basically, that enables them. There's a guy, you know, telling his story about how he was going bust, basically trying to work inside that system.
The commercial system.
And he kind of tried to figure out a way out. He's stepped outside of it. He found direct relationships with restaurants. He's now catching a fifth of the amount of fish that he was and making more money.
Wow.
And the fish is staying in the country. So he's leaving fish in the ocean and feeding his family better.
Great. Hey, so that story's coming up in the magazine at some stage?
That's not. Yeah, maybe in the next one.
Right, it's kind of emergent.
Cool.
Yeah. Hey, Aaron, thanks very much for coming. Aaron McLean is the instigator of Stone Soup Magazine. And do you cook yourself?
I do, yeah. Cook, grow. Bake.
Big garden. Hatch.
Yeah, big garden.
How big a garden do you run?
Well, I live in Arch Hill, so I've only got so much land. But all
this
of that
is the thing, though. This is what BFM listeners need to know, though.
That
you don't need a lot.
And that's and that is the focus of this next issue.
Now's the time to be planting.
Yeah. Well, you know, it would have been good to plant a bit sooner, but, you know, there's lots of places. Go, there's the dudes that sell seedlings at Grayland Farmers Market and at Parnell on Saturdays. Buy their seedlings. They'll grow fast, produce lots of food. It's free.
Thank you, Aaron. All the best to you.
Thank you.
And like Aaron says, you can find Stone Soup and the writings of a good bunch of people in cafes and restaurants near you.
And follow us on Instagram.
When's the next one due?
Next one's due mid-December.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Follow us on Instagram. You'll be able to figure out where we are and when.
Cheers. Thanks very much, Aaron. Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Cheers.